once more under the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and...
Jeff
McClure. We're here to talk to you about all things economic, but before we start talking about that dismal and dreary science, we have something even more dismal and dreary: disclosures. The two people speaking to you right now, this is the most important disclosure you may hear all day, they are bald. Mm. They are also bearded. Mm. If this causes triggering in you for some reason, you are invited to please switch to a different station or turn off the podcast.
Or consult with a qualified counselor.
Yes, immediately. A second set of disclosures, although these are on a scale of impact to you, probably not as important as the others. The program you're listening to is The Personal Wealth Coach. The name Personal Wealth Coach, or The Personal Wealth Coach, is also the name of an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission to give fiduciary investment advice. Just because it's registered and it's sort of the same people talking on here that do the firm and back and forth doesn't mean, number one, that the SEC thinks that we're any better than anybody else. In fact, they just know how to find us. What it does mean is that we have some tighter regulation on what we're allowed to say and not say. So to be very clear on that, registered to give fiduciary advice, which we cannot give on the air. So inside of everything that we do, fiduciary, find the best thing for the client. We can't do that on the air, but we can teach you stuff. So this is education, not advice. If it were advice, we'd actually have to be one-on-one or two-on-one or some other version of wrestling where we were sitting together with some degree of privacy and talking to you about your individualized stuff. And I'm not even sure anybody's listening to it. Well, yep, somebody's listening. Philip, thank you for listening. He told me we need to bring it today. Yeah, nothing like putting the pressure on, guys.
What are we bringing?
I'm bringing spaghetti. What do you have in mind?
Well, I normally try to eat meat.
All right. So steak and spaghetti. We're going to bring it today. We're not giving advice. We're giving education. We're registered with the SEC, but they don't give us any kind of approval or thumbs up or anything else. We're bald, we're bearded. You've got one you want to throw in there. There's another important disclosure in here.
Well, the information we provide on this educational radio program has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of said information.
Or unsaid information, for that matter, because give full guarantee and warranty that it is incomplete.
I will warrant that all unsaid information is unsaid.
FOB Detroit. Sorry. I had to finish that up. Okay. And the very, very last thing before we start talking 10 minutes into the hour about actually what we're here to talk about is that we're not paying for this radio spot. This is not paid commercial programming. We don't pay the station and they don't pay us. We've been doing this program for free for a long time. I'm coming up on 25 years now. In February, I'll have been doing this program with you for 25 years.
And I think I did it for a year before you came on board. Yeah. So I think it's around 26 years we've been doing this.
So that's a long time to not get paid for Saturday mornings. So that's all right. We're okay with that. This is the equivalent of humble bragging in that we're saying we're martyrs, but we're fine. We're fine. I assure you. Okay. So why are we doing it for free? I get that question. Because there's nothing out there that helps people understand what's going on. If you read the Wall Street Journal, most of what you read, you don't know what it means. So this is kind of our give back. We do get some clients out of this, and this studio advertises for us, and we advertise for, or advertises for this radio program, and we pay money to advertise for the radio program as well. So, Senator, there is no quid pro quo, or any other Latin word, especially not bad ones.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There we go. And that is our, that was our massive behemoth of disclosures. We took the small print and made it font size 18. Thank you. And we spoke slowly. It wasn't monotone at high speed. But what happened in the market this week?
Well, it's always an interesting week if you're a geek. It's a geek week as usual, but it kind of weaved and wandered around up and down with little news and big news, and finally settled at 4,090.4. That's the S&P 500 we're talking about, officially the SPX. Now, why do we say that?
Wait, say the number again. You said
4,090.46.
Okay. Okay. So why the SPX? Why SPX instead of just, everybody says S&P 500. Why do you say SPX?
Because there's different versions of the S&P 500, believe it or not. And one of them is called the SPX, and that's the one we follow. And it is without dividends. It is called the price index. And yes, if you don't know the difference, that's fine. But one of the things that we try to do is be exact as we can. And when we state something as a fact, if there are multiple versions of that fact, to state which version we're using.
Yes, because sometimes
a little weird.
Perfectly exact, we're getting it from a place that we think is correct. We have been exactly wrong in the past.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, but not only exactly wrong, but there's different versions of that thing. Anyway, it dropped 1.11% for the week, which is pretty insignificant. It's the first week of 2023 when the S&P 500 declined. It's still 6.5% higher than it was when it started the year. It's up 14.18 since mid-October, October 12th, when it hit its bottom in this particular cycle. It is still 83% higher than it was in March 3 years ago, and it is 23% higher than it was on this yesterday's date 3 years ago, which indicates all those numbers say the market is up, and it's up a lot over the last 3 years, and it is 23%. That's about the average rise if you compound that out very nicely. 7-point-something%, which is about the average that the SPX has risen for a really, really, really long time per year. Averages being, of course, a little deceiving in and of themselves. Or if you want to be exact, it's the mean. But it's still down 15% from its record high at the beginning of last year. And one of the things that I like to say, and I think it's important, if you're concerned that the market is down from its record high last year, and you think you're an investor, a long-term investor, you might want to adjust your viewpoint, because long-term investing is not 1 year or 2 year. The shortest a long-term investment, and it isn't really a long-term investment at that point, would be 3 years. And if you're not looking at 5 and 10 years, then you're probably looking at the wrong numbers. And the interesting thing to me is the media does a very poor job of letting you know what the longer-term returns in the market are. They want to tell you what it did in the last 5 minutes, or the Dow was up 23 points today, or down 14 points, or 500 points.
We haven't
really
seen
means anything.
We haven't seen this kind of point movement since yesterday.
Yesterday.
Record-breaking. 24-hour record broken once again.
I have been at this a long time, 40 years now, a little over 40 years. And I well remember when if a headline had come out and said, Dow drops 500 points, it would have been not quite the end of the world, but close enough for government work. Because the Dow, when I started 40 years ago, was for the second time rising above 1,000. So if it dropped 500 points,
that was 50%.
At that point, that'd be a 50% drop in a day.
Yeah, which we have
it's
normal.
Never done, by the
way. We have normal days of 500 point moves in the Dow these days.
So when I hear a news report, Dow dropped 500 points today, I go for just a second. And I thought, that's stupid. Unless you know where the Dow Jones Industrial Average was and what percentage that is a meaningless statement. Daily moves are basically meaningless unless they're huge.
And this is all of the reputable companies as well. The Wall Street Journal, everybody does this. This is the most common thing you will see, because it's a great headline, because they're meaning to startle you and scare you.
And so everybody what does we it. Do... With our newsletters, we try to bore you to death, and we say that over the last 3 years, the S&P 500, the SPX, is up 23%, which if you follow along with this type of thing, is entirely normal. It's like we didn't have a pandemic, and we didn't have a recession, and we didn't have inflation, and we didn't have any of the stuff that's happened over the last 3 years, As far as the S&P 500 is concerned, which is what we use as the, probably the best popularly available representation of the stock market, everything's been normal for the last 3 years.
Wait a minute. I have to ask this. What? Is the SPX concerned about things? I mean, as far as it's concerned, it's been normal.
Well, there's a guy whose last name is Silverblatt, who maintains the SP, the Standard & Poor 500 statistical data and publishes it every day. Mm-hmm. He is the personification. I'm not sure if he's a real person. He is the personification of the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index.
Anthropomorphism writ large. Here we
are. Yes. So,
ladies and gentlemen, meet the SPX.
If Mr. Silverblatt believes something, then he is the spokesperson for the SPX.
As far as he's concerned,
he could be concerned. He could be concerned. Yeah.
So, as far as he's concerned, not much has happened in the last 12 months.
3 years.
3 years. 12 months as well. I mean, pretty low. I mean, not much has happened in the last 12 months. It's just a little drop. And next month and the month after that, it's going to be no drop. So if we look back 12 months from last month, there was a big drop. And if we look back 12 months from this month, there's a smaller drop. And if we look back 12 months from October, it's this coming October. I mean, no knowing what's going on here, but that was a bottom of one of the bottoms of the bear. So that's likely to look really good in returns, but it's measuring from a bottom. So that's the point I'm trying to make. Not that nothing happened in the last 12 months or that we're not down for the last 12 months, but if you looked up last month, you would have said, so go ahead.
The point I wanted to make is if you're looking at a 3-year moving average for the stock market, you would conclude that nothing of any significance happened in that 3-year period.
There was no pandemic. There was no
inflation, no pandemic, no interest rates shooting up.
No invasion of Ukraine.
And that's my point. If you are a long-term investor and you are you're leaving money invested as opposed to saved or something, and you're not a speculator, then you should have an eye on the long-term returns. We watch that very carefully. And sometimes there's some really shocking information in the long-term returns. And we can talk about that later in the show. I think it's important to talk about that is not visible in the short-term return. And that's where the important stuff occurs. Anyway.
So what about the CRSP?
The CRSP. Yes, we also follow the CRSP U.S. Mid-Cap Value Index. Why? Because the S&P 500 is dominated by large growth companies, growth-oriented companies that are priced according to their perceived future growth, whereas the Mid-Cap Value Index is smaller companies that are priced according to what they are intrinsically worth, which we find more rational. It dropped 1.36% for the week to 2483.69, but remains up 6.16% this year and is only 3.37% lower than its record high as 2022 began. So it's a nice contrast. Different parts of, because actually the Mid-Cap Value Index is actually almost all composed of S&P 500 stocks. It's a different kind of S&P 500 stocks. Anyway, the yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury, which is really important, it rose rose all week slowly to close at 3.74%, 6% more interest being charged than there was a week ago. That's relatively large. The reason that the interest rates at the 10-year level went up steadily all week, at least that's what is reported in the Wall Street Journal, and I agree with it, is the fact that it's beginning to settle in that the Federal Reserve Board, when it says we are going to pump interest rates up to over 5%, maybe as much as 6% in the short term, and we're going to leave them there for a long time, that they mean it. They really mean what they're saying. And it's beginning to settle in that a 3.74% yield on the 10-year is probably not high enough. It's probably going to go a lot higher than that before it's all over with. And so it's gradually beginning to creep back up to that level. It's driven by market participation like anything else. Let's see. We want to talk about the job reports from last week.
That's out of the market. Now we're...
Okay, no, wait a minute. Let's see. The yield curve is still pretty seriously inverted.
Yeah.
The 1-year 6-month and 4-month T-bills are yielding 4.89%, which is, again, something else I want to talk about during the show.
That's an interesting thing that all of those different time periods have exactly the same yield on Friday.
Yes. West Texas Intermediate crude oil rose in price all week to reach 79.83, which is not significant. It's been bobbing around a little above, up to about 80 and then back down to 77 and so on. It's up 8.2% for the week because the market basically reacted to the fact that Russia announced it was going to cut oil production by 5%, which should raise global price of oil. And that's the markets.
All right.
There's lots more to the markets than that. But yeah,
there's a lot of markets. We didn't get into pork bellies. We didn't say anything about
gold,
real estate, currencies. There's so many markets. We didn't say anything about groceries or about cheap plastic eggs. Toys, small plastic things. SPTs. Hey, we could put an acronym out there and just start dropping that everywhere. And SPTs are down this month, and we're recommending that everyone be aware of that. Small plastic toys are down this month. Yes. So let's see what's going on in the world. We got a lot of stuff to talk about related to the markets. We have a question in on our email addresses. So let me give the email addresses one more time.
Yes.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the email addresses in here are jeff@tpwc.com and jake@tpwc.com. That's Tango Papa Whiskey Charlie or thepersonalwealthcoach.com. And Roger emailed in and said that at least one person who heard Jeff say remove cover before striking said, I think that's supposed to be close cover before striking.
It's correct.
It is. But remove cover before striking, I prefer because it's the analogy I made with a hat wouldn't work if you put the hat on someone before. Yeah. So fortunately, I don't think it's a
It is closed cover before striking.
Yeah.
It's completely correct.
Where did you get that information? You said you got all the information on here from sources you deem to be reliable. We're going to have to verify this again three times.
I'll have to research that.
Can you use carbon paper for that? We need three copies of the research for sure in pencil. Yes.
Well, we're trying to exist in a low carbon environment.
He did say at the end of that, fortunately, I don't think that's an SEC reportable statement. You never know. You never know. All right. So what happened this week? Man, there was a balloon, a big Chinese balloon. For those of you listening in the future, you're going to say, huh? Or you might say, oh, that was the beginning of the balloon wars. Most likely you'll say, huh? Because, man, that's a good name for a science fiction novel, isn't it?
Balloon Wars?
Yeah, there we go. Before the Balloon Wars, people thought balloons were silly party things. No. So that happened this week. The scheduled trip of our Secretary of State Blinken to the Chinese was canceled because we were trying to make things up and they went so far as to put a balloon over us. Now, this is not downplaying the severity of that balloon, but I think it's quite a nice, catchy headline to say, Secretary of State refuses to visit China because of popped balloon. I just think that's a great headline.
We also had the fact that the Secretary of Defense tried to call the Minister of Defense in China over the balloon, and Minister of China refuses to talk about pop balloon or balloon in general. A balloon is technically a bubble.
Yes, a bubble popped this week over the markets.
Over the ocean, at least. Yeah.
So that happened this week, and why is that important? Because there's a bunch of other stuff going on in China right now. Our trade with China is picking up. The U.S.-China trade is massively picking up. Imported goods from China totaled $536.8 billion. That's a little over half $1 trillion in 2022. Now, just time out for a second. The U.S. government budget is measured in the tens of trillions of dollars. And the economy of the United States as a whole, like the value of it, not what's happened this year in the GDP, but the whole value of the economy is measured in the hundreds of trillions of dollars. And in 2022, we imported $500 billion worth of goods from China. That is a 6.3% increase from the prior year. However, it's still down from 2018. So 2018 was the beginning of the trade war with China. And this is something we want to make clear. We're increasing trade with China. Well, why? Is it something we've done? Have we removed tariffs? No, they're opening up their businesses. Their factories are coming back online. The Chinese New Year, the Lunar New Year, I should say, is completed. It's a month-long kind of festival. They're coming back to work. The factories are starting back up. And they really haven't been at full manufacturing capacity for about 3 years. So this is a big, big deal. And if this is a piece of recollection for you, at the end of 2019, the first phase of a two-phase reconciliation trade deal between the Trump administration and the Xi administration was signed. It was right before COVID hit, and nothing has been said about it since then. Other things got bigger in the way, and it was just scrapped. So we had a trade war sort of start to come to an end and then not come to an end. And then the massive pandemic hitting. So our trade with China has been down. And the quality of goods from China has also been down, which is saying a lot because China is not known for high quality goods. So why am I bringing this all up now? Because this is kind of maybe one of the last big booms in Chinese manufacturing based on what their current planning is and on the current planned in outside investment into China. It doesn't look like much in the way of new manufacturing facilities are being built right now in China by anybody that isn't from China. And that's a big deal. It's going elsewhere. So we're on the cusp of something amazing. I don't know if it's a good amazing or a bad amazing. We won't know until years from now looking back. But the change in how we do business with China is fully underway. And at this point, it would be a massive effort by almost all businesses to reverse this. Money has been spent. Facilities are being made elsewhere. That is not a good sign for Chinese future. And so the government of China is focusing more in on making a consumer culture while still not really protecting intellectual property. So this is a big, big issue rather than what happened this week. This what's going on right now is a kind of in the middle of a massive shift, a different direction, completely different from what we've been doing since the mid-90s. In the 1990s, there was this concept of free trade will bring down all enemies. The Soviet Union fell because rock and roll and free trade. They could buy Levi's jeans in the Soviet Union right before the wall came down in between East Germany and West Germany and Berlin. So The concept, I make it sound like the whole country was divided just inside Berlin. You know what I mean. So this concept of the shift, where we are, it's completely different now. It's still very free trade oriented going forward, but only amongst groups of friendly nations. We're drawing lines that are separating us again. And most of the time in history when that occurs, it leads to some form of conflict. It has occurred now. I mean, we've got a Ukrainian conflict. That may be the extent of it historically. It may be bigger. So what we have is the Russians and the Iranians and the Chinese and the North Koreans are kind of forming a trade bloc. And and the Indians are kind of trying to dabble on that trade bloc and the Western world's trade bloc. So they may be the ones that wind up best out of all of this. We don't know. But it is a massive shift. I can't underline this enough. It's for the last 30 years, the entire world economy has been heading in one direction, and it's made a major shift. The long term of this is probably moving more toward automation. We're seeing a lot of that kick in, artificial intelligence guiding, or at least machine learning, guiding machines on how they're picking vegetables and how they're making different types of plastic molding, injection moldings and plastic mixes and so on. So we're seeing something that's well beyond an industrial revolution. It's industrial. It's information. So we had multiple industrial revolutions in the past. The big one that we kind of refer to is the beginning of the 20th century. And then we had the information revolution starting in the 1980s as computers were coming online and bringing us the internet. And now we're having an information industrial revolution that may just continue forever. It may be that as the machine learning takes over and starts designing new machines to do each layer, we could see prices continue to drop. And this is the last piece of this whole weirdness. The last 30 years of free trade caused us to have very, very little inflation because there was so much competition across the world. If you raised your prices, somebody else was not going to, and so you would buy from them instead of you. And that's the concept. Over the long period, that's brought prices down. If you look at everything electronic, how much did it cost to buy a big Curtis Mathis bureau-shaped television that had a 32-inch screen? And that was massive. It was a whole yard across, a 32-inch, and you knew somebody in the neighborhood that had one of those. To today, when a 32-inch screen in your living room is considered, why do they have such a small thing? And you can pick it up and carry it in one hand, where it took four of your biggest neighbors to move that Curtis Mathis thing in there, and you might destroy every bit of door frame on the way. So from then to now, it's not like the quality of the machine has gone down. It's gone up. It's exponentially better. The amount of clarity you get in that electronic thing is so much better than the tube that the Curtis Mathis was running on. And I have very fond memories of those big things and those little things. But the price is significantly less. And if you go back and look at the prices for a big Curtis Mathis television in 1982, and you compare it to what people are paying today, it's the same price without inflation taken into account. It's just the same price. You can buy... only if you're buying same screen size, it's a lot less. It cost about $1,200 to buy a 32-inch Curtis Mathis television. And if you apply inflation to that, that's somewhere in the range of $3,500. It was a big investment, and it was a big deal to have it. To get a 32-inch television today is like $180. And we've had significant inflation since then. Well, why is that? Well, number one, technology's come along. We found cheaper ways of doing it. Well, what are the cheaper ways of doing it? We opened up our market and didn't charge other countries to provide us with parts or labor. We have the technology. They put the stuff together. So we've had a very stable inflation environment for the last 30 years. Very, very low. Very, very low inflation. Then we hit the pandemic, and all of the structure of that massive shift to free trade and open up, and we're going to do it just in time, broke. Because the trade, it wasn't like the trade war stopped it. No, it was the fact that everybody needed to go inside and close the door and not come out without a mask, and certainly not come out and turn on your factory for a while. And some countries took a lot longer to turn the factories back on. So all that infrastructure that was built over three decades is being replaced over the last 3 years, and probably for the next 3 years. So we have a very compressed shift of three decades into 6 years. And that's still ongoing. And this is what we're witnessing in China, is that the trade war was the first knock to Chinese as the manufacturing center of the world. And there's the joke from the last 30 years that says, you know, God lives in China. And the answer is supposed to say, why is that? Well, because God made everything, and everything's made in China. So we're going from that to, and before that, where was everything made? What was it before that? It was the United States. In Germany, if you bought something, you would say it came from the United States. You have more to add.
There was a period of time that I remember many, many years ago when there was a ubiquitous label on most inexpensive things that you bought at stores. It was called Made in Japan.
Yep.
And Japan went from cheap Made in Japan to quality Made in Japan to Japan being very wealthy and buying up Pebble Beach and the Rockefeller Center and two or three other things like that. And then they woke up one day and said, whoops, this is not working. And it fell on their faces.
Yeah.
And have remained in a kind of state of disequilibrium ever since.
Yeah, they're coming out of that to some extent over the last...
Yes.
Even in the middle of the pandemic, we're seeing a revitalization taking there, but it's because of their changed policies. China's going the opposite direction.
Well, I see the pattern repeating itself, and I guess it's because I'm older than dirt, but...
It depends on the dirt. If it's recently composted, then I'm older than dirt, but some dirt is older than me. So I'm just saying.
Here's the point I want to make. I see China pretty much following the same path. We've talked about this on this radio program before about Back to the Future, and now that's an ancient movie. But Back to the Future, there was an assumption that in the future we'd all be speaking Japanese, and the Japanese would own everything in the United States. There is this perception right now that the Chinese are going to dominate the world, and they're going to run over everything, and they're going to crush everybody in their path. And no, they have the same problem, albeit at a larger level, that the Japanese did. And that one of the key things that happened in Japan was there were two key aspects, I think, to what happened in Japan. One, they have a very insular culture. They do not like other kinds of people in their country. They're very, very insular. Secondly, they're not having a lot of kids. They're having very few kids, and as a result, their population is shrinking, and they're getting older. And as they get older, they get more conservative and more insular, which leads to decline. That is going on in China. China has hit peak. There's a general consensus that I've read from multiple sources that China probably hit their peak population and are declining.
Yeah.
And it's happening faster than most people, including the Chinese government, apparently expected.
The same.
COVID tipped them over the limb.
Yeah, everybody on the planet had a baby dearth during the pandemic. And it's not like the pandemic's over or gone. We're living with it. It's around. People are getting sick with it still. But it's not a novel virus anymore. We've got some degree of immunity to it. We still had a big, big dearth in babies and marriages for a while.
There's a big picture in history, though, that is a little concerning, I would say, to say the least. When an empire, and China is not a country, it's an empire. It has multiple sub-countries within it that traditionally have their own language and historically their own government and everything else, but China dominates. And just as Russia is an empire, traditionally, when empires begin to decline
there are several hundred spoken languages in China.
Right. And in Russia. When empires start to decline and their birth rates fall, they commonly have a spasm of armed aggression as they decline. It's a very, very common thing throughout history. The Ottoman Empire did it. That's part of what World War I was. The Austro-Hungarian Empire did it. That was World War I. The German Empire did it. That was World War I and II. You start down this list of events and you realize there's this pattern through history. Both the Chinese and Russian empires are declining. They're in decline. They both have leaders that have become popular, or at least become powerful, by stating they want to reassert the former greatness of their mythical empire that never really was all that great. And that they're willing to do so by using armed forces. Folks, the German Empire, the leader made the same statement in the 1920s and 30s. You go down the list of empires and you realize this is a pattern. So it's something that it's worthy of considering. One, the Chinese are not going to dominate the world. I'm quite confident of that. They're not capable, won't ever be capable. Two, they are in decline. And three, they're getting more aggressive. So this is one of those things where countering that aggression is a critical element to prevent a major war.
I have to agree with you. You just said something that's really startling to some people, that they're not capable. The Chinese are not capable of dominating the world. And we've talked about that in the past, and it's a very American-centric viewpoint that we have, that's measuring our success versus their success. And the big things that we're pointing at are things like intellectual property rights and innovation. Those are big, big, big things, and there's Nobel Prize granted on it. That Douglas North has lots to say on the subject. The idea is, if you make something and it's really cool and really new and everybody goes, this is the best thing ever, and you don't get paid for it, then you're probably not going to make another one, especially if other people are getting paid for your idea. And so having some version of protection on that is totally lacking in China.
I mentioned that because there are fiction works about the Nazis dominating the world. There are fiction works about the Russian Empire in the form of the Soviet Union dominating the world. Those are fiction works that they somehow swept out. I mean, what was it? Red Storm, right? No, it was Red, whatever, Red Dawn.
Red Dawn, the Cubans invaded the United States and took
the
over.
Cubans and the Russians, right?
This is the original Red Dawn, which I believe is a much better movie than the second one. But it was still the Cubans that invaded the United States in Colorado and somehow flew over the red. Yeah, so we had these thoughts that they would be able to do it, but Cuba never had the ability in any way, shape, or form to take over any portion except for maybe the Keys, the Florida Keys, maybe, until we got enough of a naval presence. I mean, they don't have the kind of armed forces, and never did, that would allow them to do it.
And that the Chinese are basically, in every aspect, incapable of dominating any area much larger than what they currently dominate. Yes, right. They would like to dominate the South China Sea, and their goal, stated goal and published goal, is to dominate the Western Pacific and the countries around them in Asia. But they really don't have the capacity to do that, because their economic capacity, which is at the root of everything, is very, 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 very largely dependent upon trade with the United States. And here's the key thing. And the United States' ability to secure the oceans between them and Africa.
This is the other piece of that. Trade with the United States is not as simple as that. When we say trade, what are we trading? Number one, we're trading dollars. But let's kind of move the monetary concept to the side. We send information to China. Here's how we want this part made. This new part that's never been made before. China goes, we can make this cheaper than anyone else because we don't believe in pollution control or safety control or the fact that children shouldn't be working in the factory. Sometimes we use slaves, but we can make it cheaper. And we are in the United States kind of slowly waking up to, wait, we probably shouldn't let them enslave a whole group of people to make our purses cheaper. That's probably not what we want to do. And so we're starting to have some ethical qualms as their prices are rising. And this is important economically. And we got to play some commercials, but I need to make this point. Ethics in economics generally occur when the price changes. So ethically, people say, I don't want to drive a gas-guzzling car, but they're driving it for their entire adult life, until electric cars become less expensive. And then they go, yes, I'm very eco-conscious. And the same thing is here. We're going, oh, yeah, look at the price on this thing. This beats the price at Walmart for sure. And you buy it, and you find out, well, there may be slavery involved in that. Oh, yeah, I can't prove that. And then Walmart's prices drop, and the prices or the quality goes up at Walmart and drops here. And you people go, maybe I shouldn't buy from slaves. And that's what's going on. And we got to play some commercials. And there's more of that. The concepts around what drives economies are fascinating and wonderful things. And we can talk about them after the commercial break. However, if you'd like to join the conversation with us, Our email addresses in here are jeff@tpwc.com and jake@tpwc.com. That's Tango Papa Whiskey Charlie, or The Personal Wealth Coach. And we'll be back on the other side of these, I'm sure, vitally important comments from our sponsors. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake, and on the line with me, I have
Jeff McClure.
Together, we're McClures. Jeff is white bearded, and Jake is salt and pepper bearded. We've been working together for 32 years. Is that weird to you?
It is weird. There's a lot of things that are weird. I'm feeling more and more weird as time goes by.
No, that's on a professional basis. We have actually been together for a lot longer than that, as the older Baldy, Jeff, is my younger Baldy, Jake, father, just in case you didn't know. A lot of people think we're brothers, and that may be true in a partnership sense, but he's still my dad in a very real and legally binding manner. My dear old dad. Yes, and if you got that reference, then I'm sure you got a grin on your face. And if you didn't get that reference, you went, man, those guys are weird. It's true.
Well, that's a general truth.
It is it's a generalized truth and should have been part of our disclosure. We're weird. Okay, so I spent a long time talking about China and the direction there. I think it might be a good idea to talk about intellectual property. We only have about 5 minutes left in this hour, so approaching intellectual property in 5 minutes is insane, but what's that?
Let me throw something out there that I think is...
Well, I want to make a quick reference to the commercial. The commercial, and I'm sure online it's a different commercial, and in the... on the web, it's one thing, and we don't even have ads on our podcasts. But it was a supplement for joint health, and it's backed by 19 patents. They said that on the air. And when we talk about intellectual property, well, a patent is a version of an intellectual property. They got a statement that says whatever it was that they patent, they made it. Nobody else has made it before. Everybody else has to give that a period of time before they copy it. It doesn't mean that whatever it is that's patented is viable or correct or anything else. It's just a good idea that they think might be worth spending a couple of $100 to put at the patent office just in case. Without having that license to keep your own idea, the ability for somebody with a large manufacturing facility to just take it and make a bunch of money without having to do any of the long thought process or innovate it or any of the things that happen in a creative mind, it stifles innovation. It causes the act of creating to go away. And China has just gone through a big stint of that, starting before the pandemic, when the Chinese government really started cracking down on its big tech. This is the big tech of China. Some innovation was occurring there. Some of it was just straight up intellectual property theft. Huawei didn't make anything. They combined a bunch of stolen property. They were the first ones to make 5G, which is the compressed format at very high speeds of cellular data. And the reason why they were the first ones to do it is because all of their competitors in the Western world, South Korea, the Danes, the United States, the UK, everybody was making their own cell phones in China. And China's state-owned portion of Huawei said, hey, why don't you have these plans and these plans and these plans? And Huawei said, hey, if we just combine all this stuff, look, the technology's right there. we're the first ones with it. And it led to a completely new thing because there were lawsuits, and the licensing fee got put away and was replaced with a punishment fee, a punitive damages that they're paying as if it's a licensing fee. But everybody got 5G because of it. So all the other companies came up with 5G because they were allowed to copy Huawei, who had copied them. That's not cool. And that damages the innovation and our want to make anything over there. So when we think about motivation for an economy, intellectual property, why should I go and make my stuff if you're going to steal it at your place? Why don't I go over and sit in your living room and show you how to make my secret recipe, and then you go out and tell the world, or just start doing it yourself and calling it your own? When we say they don't have the capability, it isn't that they don't have the people. It's that their technology is so reliant on our own. They're not innovating. And that's my wrap up for, it was a big subject talking about, and I'm not sure, I truly didn't cover all that I needed to on it, but it's a good thought process. We're in a big change right now.
What I wanted to say, and I think this is the bottom line, China fears chaos. A collapse of its economy would drive it into chaos. Mm-hmm. It is dependent upon Western Europe, United States to avoid that chaos. They're in a really awkward position where they are very dependent upon us and they don't like it. And we're out of time for this hour.
If you'd like to talk to us off the air, we actually do portfolio management and investment advice as a fiduciary, at a fiduciary level at the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to talk to us off the air, we have voicemail on the weekends, real live people with no phone tree on the weekdays locally at
254-947-1111.
Or toll free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. where you can read our newsletter, sign up for it. We send it out every Friday. You can listen to our radio program going back lots of years. Contact us on the contact form or directly at Jeff and Jake and or Jake at tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.